ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय हरे कृष्ण सो टुडे वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 9 चैप्टर 4 चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड अंबरीश महाराज ऑफेंडेड बाय दुर्वास मुनि टुडे वी विल बी रीडिंग फ्रॉम टेक्स्ट 41 to text 44. The first three verses, that is 41 to 43, they do not have purports, so I will just read through them and read the translations. Ityappa prashya rajarshish chintayan manasa achyutam pratyachashtak kuru shrestha dvijagamanam evasah. O best of the Kuru dynasty, after he drank some water, King Ambarish, meditating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead within his heart, waited for the return of the great mystic Durvasa Muni. Durvasa Yamuna Kulat Kritavasyaka Agataha Rajna Abhinanditastasya Bubudhe Cheshtitam Dhiya. After executing the ritualistic ceremonies to be performed at noon, Durvasa returned from the bank of the Yamuna. The king received him well, offering all respects, but Durvasa Muni, by his mystic power, could understand that King Ambarish had drunk water without his permission. Manyuna prachalat gatro bhrukuti kutila ananaha bhubukshitascha sutaram kritanjalim abhasata. Still hungry, Durvasa Muni, his body trembling, his face curved and his eyebrows crooked in a frown, angrily spoke as follows to King Ambarish, who stood before him with folded hands. Text 44. Please repeat after me. Aho, aho asya nirsamsasya. श्रियोन्मत्तस्य पश्यत धर्मव्यतिक्रमं विष्णोर् अभक्तस्येष मानिनः अहो अस्य नृशंसस्य. ट्रांसलेशन इन परपोर्ट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस अभय चरणारविंद भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद. ट्रांसलेशन. Alas, just see the behavior of this cruel man. He is not a devotee of Lord Vishnu. Being proud of his material opulence and his position, he considers himself God. Just see how he has transgressed the laws of religion. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has diverted the entire meaning of this verse as spoken by Durvasa Muni. Durvasa Muni used the word nrusamsasya to indicate that the king was cruel. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur interprets it to mean that the king's character was glorified by all the local people. He says that the word nri means by all the local people, and that shamsasya means of he, that is Ambarish, whose character was glorified. Similarly, one who is very rich becomes mad because of his wealth and is therefore called Shriya Unmattasya. But Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur interprets these words to mean that although Maharaj Ambarish was such an opulent king, he was not mad after money, for he had already surpassed the madness of material opulence. Similarly, the word Ishamaninaha is interpreted to mean that he was so respectful to the Supreme Personality of Godhead that he did not transgress the laws for observing Ekadashi Vrata, Ekadashi Parana, despite the thinking of Durvasa Muni, for he only took water. In this way, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has supported Ambarish Maharaj and all his activities. Hare Krishna. when I was asked to this give this class, and I first read this translation, I was a bit surprised. Because Ambarish Maharaj, he is glorified in the scriptures as a personality who has perfected devotional service in all the different aspects that you can perform. Like there are different devotees who have perfected their devotional service through different aspects. Sarvanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, there are different 9 ways by which one can perform devotional service, and for each method of performing devotional service there is one personality who has been described as who has perfected that particular method of performing devotional service. Like for hearing we have Parikshit Maharaj, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, all the 9 limbs. But Ambarish Maharaj is glorified as one who has perfected all the 9 limbs. One person who has perfected devotional, performing devotional service through all the 9 limbs. And for such a personality, in this verse, apparently it seems a very harsh description. In this verse, Durvasa Muni says, Aho asya nrusamsasya. So, if we take the Sanskrit meaning, nrusamsasya, so he says he is cruel. Direct translation of nrusamsasya comes out to be one who is cruel. Second word he uses is shriya unmattasya. He is puffed up because of his great opulence. Then also he says that Vishnu abhaktasya. Now this was the ultimate epithet that someone could use, especially to describe a personality like Ambarish Maharaj. Vishnu abhaktasya. One who is not a devotee of Lord Vishnu. So, because the verse is on one page and the purport is on the back side, so when I just read the verse, I read the word for word meanings, and I was like perplexed, little amused also, that now what will Prabhupada say in the purport? What will Prabhupada reveal in the purport? So when I turned the page and I read it, the purport, so then when I started reading the purport, this slowly it began to dawn on me what will be the theme of what I will speak about in this class today. So, Srila Prabhupada has written the very first line of the purport as, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has diverted the entire meaning of this verse as spoken by Durvasa Muni. So where, according to direct Sanskrit meaning, nrusamsasya means that one who is cruel, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that nrusamsasya can also mean that the king's character, that is Ambarish Maharaj's character, was glorified by all the local people. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also explains that generally Shriya Unmattasya means one who is rich, very rich, and has become very mad because of his wealth. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he interprets these words that even though Ambarish Maharaj was really opulent, but he was not mad after money because he had already surpassed the madness, like the madness of material opulence. Like we see the example of this Brahmana who came to Sanatana Goswami. One time a Brahmana who was quite impoverished, he came to Sanatana Goswami and asked him to give him something by which his condition in life would improve. So Sanatana Goswami told him, you see that heap of garbage lying there? In that heap somewhere there is a Chintamani stone. You take that and whatever you touch with that Chintamani stone, it will turn into gold. You go and take it. And then Sanatana Goswami continued doing what he was doing. So this Brahmana, he ran to that heap of garbage and started searching, and he found this stone. And when he found this stone, initially he could not believe. He said, how can he give it so easily? So let me test it. So he tested, touched a few things, and all of that turned into gold. So then he was convinced, yes, this is Chintamani. Then again he started to have second thoughts, that if this is Chintamani, it is actually the genuine, you know, genuine stuff, what is it doing in this heap of garbage? Why is it lying in this heap of garbage? I mean, if this is lying, what do we put in a garbage, you know? What do we throw in garbage? Things which, garbage means that which is useless. So he was, I mean, slightly intelligent. So he started thinking and he said, if Sanatan Goswami has put this Chintamani stone in this heap of garbage where we throw all useless things, that means he must be considering this as useless. So he must have something which is much, much, much more precious than this. So therefore, let me go and inquire from him, what is that precious thing which he has? If I get that, then really my life will be successful. So he goes to Sanatan Goswami and he inquires this way. Yo Goswami, you told me there is this Chintamani stone. I found the Chintamani stone and it is actually the Chintamani stone. But since it is lying in a heap of garbage, I can understand that this is something which you consider as useless. And there is something which is much more valuable than this which you possess. So please, kindly give me that which you consider much more valuable and much more priceless than this Chintamani stone. Please give me that. So then Sanatan Goswami said, I can give you that. But there is a price that you have to pay. So now this Brahmana, his suspicion was confirmed that there is something more priceless, more valuable which Sanatan Goswami possesses. So then when his suspicion was confirmed, he immediately said, yes, yes, whatever you ask, I am ready to pay the price. So Sanatan Goswami said, be very careful and think twice before you accept my proposal. So he said, no, 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 I don't have to think twice. I have thought it over and I am ready to pay any price that you ask. So then Sanatan Goswami said, first, you will have to go and throw that Chintamani stone into the river Yamuna. Throw that Chintamani stone in the river Yamuna and come back to me. So by now, this Brahmana, he was so much eager to get this more valuable, much more precious thing which Sanatan Goswami possessed, that he just went right away, threw it into the Yamuna, the Chintamani stone, and came back. So this act which the Brahmana performed was what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is saying here. That even though Maharaj Ambarish was an opulent king, he was not mad after money. Why he was not mad after money? Because he had already surpassed the madness for material opulence. So similarly, when the Brahmana exhibited his readiness to give up even that material opulence, that object which would give him unlimited material opulence, only then did Sanatan Goswami consider him to be eligible or fit to receive that which was really valuable and dear to him, and that is the gift of the holy names of the God. So therefore, we should understand that as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has explained this very nicely in this verse, we should understand that the Srimad Bhagavatam is Amala Puran, and it is supposed to contain the narrations of the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His devotees. In the very first canto, we see that after compiling all the Vedic scriptures, after compiling all the Puranas, the Upanishads, everything, Vyasadeva is sitting despondent. He does not feel satisfaction within the core of the heart. And he is despondent. He can't understand, why is my mind, my heart beset with this despondency? I have compiled all the Vedic scriptures, all the Upanishads, all the Puranas, and still after all this compilation, I am not able to feel the transcendental bliss within the core of my heart. Why is this? So at that time, Vyasadeva's Guru, Srila Narad Muni, arrives at that place. And then he says, he addresses Vyasadeva as the son of Parashara. He says, are you satisfied by identifying with the body or the mind as objects of self-realization? Are you satisfied by just identifying with the body or the mind as the object of self-realization? So he is just hinting. See, depending upon the person whom you are talking to, you know, as they say in Hindi, samajhdar ko ishara hi kafi hota hai. So if the person who is in front of you, he is qualified enough, even a small hint that we give them, they will be able to immediately grasp what is being said, what is the message which is being transmitted behind this. So similarly, here Narad Muni, also recognizing the great scholastic work, the output that Vyasadeva has given, he has compiled his great compilations. So he is also means acknowledging his scholastic abilities, and therefore he is talking in such a cryptic manner. Are you satisfied by identifying with the body or the mind as objects of self-realization? Parituṣyati sharīra ātmā mānasa evavā. Are you satisfied? So then he says, so in response to this, Vyasadeva says, like the sun, you travel everywhere in the three worlds. And like the air, you can penetrate the internal region of everyone. As such, you are as good as the all-pervasive super soul. Why? Because you travel all the three worlds like the sun, and like the air, you can even penetrate the internal region of every individual entity. So therefore, now this exhibits the great humility of Vyasadeva. In spite of, after all the compilation of all the Vedic scriptures, the four Vedas, Puranas, Upanishad, all of those compilations, and Vedanta Sutra, after all of that, now he is saying, because you are as good as the all-pervasive super soul, please find out what is the deficiency in me. Why am I feeling this despondency? And despite, not only that I am feeling this despondency, but not that I have committed any error or not that I have committed any gross wrongdoing. I am feeling the despondency, I am finding that there is a deficiency in me, in spite of me, despite of my being absorbed in transcendence under disciplinary regulations and vows. That means I am engaged in my sadhana, I am engaged in my day-to-day activities of worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead according to the prescribed rules and regulations properly. And in spite of such engagement, I am finding that there is some deficiency in me. So please tell me, what is the deficiency in me? So this is such a nice, humble attitude which Vyasadeva exhibits. So then Narad Muni, in his response, that when Vyasadeva asks this such a question to Narad Muni, who is his, Narad Muni is the guru of Vyasadeva. So when questioned in such a way, in such a humble manner, Narad Muni responds to this question. And he says that you have not actually broadcast the sublime and spotless glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So you have written, you have compiled all these four Vedas, the Upanishads, the Puranas, everything, Vedanta Sutra, you have compiled all of that. But still, what you have compiled does not broadcast directly the sublime and spotless glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then Narad Muni says, that philosophy which does not satisfy the transcendental senses of the Lord is considered worthless. So in spite of such a prodigious output in terms of the number of literatures that you have compiled, still the reason why you are feeling despondent is because that literature, that philosophy which does not satisfy the transcendental senses of the Lord is considered worthless. So in effect, Narad Muni is telling that all of your compilations is actually worthless. Why? Because you have not actually broadcast the sublime and spotless glories of the personality of Godhead. Although you have very broadly described the four principles, beginning with religious performances, you have not described the glories of the Supreme Personality Vasudev. Those words which do not, Narad Muni is going on. Those words which do not describe the glories of the Lord, who alone can sanctify the atmosphere of the whole universe, are considered by saintly persons to be like unto a place of pilgrimage for crows. So what is a place for pilgrimage for crows? Where do we find the crows maximum? At a garbage dump. Where all sorts of dirty refuse articles are thrown, and we see crows swooping around on that garbage dump. So, this is in such nice poetic Sanskrit, Narad Muni is actually chastising his disciple, Vyasadev. Since the all perfect persons are inhabitants of the transcendental abode, they do not derive any pleasure there. So they do not derive any, where do the all perfect persons, that means those who are perfected in their spiritual pursuits, they do not derive any pleasure in a place where the glories of the Lord are not described. Or what? Tad Vyasa Tirtham, that means a place of pilgrimage for crows. So when we go to a garbage dump, generally the birds that we find there are only crows. We don't see any swans there. No swan will even come near within a 5 kilometer radius of a garbage dump. Only crows will be found all over at that place. And then he gives the other half. He says, on the other hand, that literature which is full of descriptions of the transcendental glories of the name, fame, forms and pastimes of the Supreme Lord is a different creation, full of transcendental words directed towards bringing about a revolution in the impious lives of this world's misdirected civilization. Such transcendental literatures, even though imperfectly composed, are heard, sung and accepted by purified men who are thoroughly honest. So after such a heavy chastisement from Narad Muni, then Vyasadeva tells him, what you have done? How could you do such a thing? He says, the people in general are naturally inclined to enjoy. And what have you done? You have encouraged them in that way, in the name of religion. This is verily condemned and is quite unreasonable. Because they are guided under their instructions, they will accept such activities in the name of religion and will hardly care for prohibitions. So therefore, we see in this world today, there are so many people, whatever they want to do, they will somehow find some quotation in Sanskrit which justifies what they want to do, and then they carry on. It is said in the Vedas. So therefore we are doing. This is sanctioned by the Vedas. So this is the thing which Narad Muni is condemning here. He said that people are naturally inclined to enjoy, and what you have done, you have encouraged them in that way, in the name of religion. So ultimately, after all this chastisement, then finally Narad Muni gives his instruction, what then Vyasadeva has to do to rectify the situation. He tells very clearly, your goodness has perfect vision. So he first says, you have perfect vision. He tells this to Vyasadeva. And then says, you yourself can know the Supreme Personality of Godhead because you are present as the plenary portion of the Lord. So Vyasadeva himself is a plenary portion of the Lord. So although you are birthless, you have appeared on this earth for the well-being of all people. So you have appeared for the well-being of all people. So now do something, or now do something which will actually be the cause of true well-being for all the people. And what is that? Please therefore describe the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Sri Krishna more vividly. So here Narad Muni gives a very clear cut and direct instruction to his disciple Vyasadeva that what are you supposed to do? You are supposed to describe the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Lord Krishna more vividly, with more detail. So transcendental pastimes of the Lord, and when the in the pastimes of the Lord, of course his devotees are also involved. So therefore this Srimad Bhagavatam is the Amal Puran, and it is written at the maturity of Vyasadeva's spiritual realizations. And after he has composed all the Vedic scriptures, after he goes through this period of despondency, and then his Gurudev points out what are the errors that he has committed, and therefore what he should do to rectify this error, and that is describe the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now naturally, after such an instruction, we should understand that Vyasadeva is not going to write anything which is going to be blasphemous towards the Lord or his devotees. So therefore, when we see certain verses in the Vedic scriptures or the Puranas or Srimad Bhagavatam also, it sometimes will confuse us. Like this particular verse, the verse and the translation is on this side of the page, and the purport is on this side of the page. So when I first read the verse and I read the word for word meanings, I was completely bewildered. Because the word for word meaning says that this king, who is a cruel man, now the king around here in this pastime is Ambarish Maharaj. How can he be cruel, described as cruel in Srimad Bhagavatam? Secondly, he is Sriya Unmattasya, puffed up because of great opulence. Then Dharma Vyatikramam, he is transgressing the regulative principles of religion. He is Vishnu Abhakta, he is not a devotee of Lord Vishnu. And Isha Manina, he considers himself the Supreme Lord and independent of everything. So if we see this background of how Narad Muni is directly instructing Vyasadeva that what you are supposed to do to rectify this problem that you have created, and Narad Muni is telling Vyasadeva that you have to glorify the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead more directly, more vividly. So Narad Muni is talking about glorifying the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his devotees. How can there be some description where the devotee is being blasphemed, where somebody is using certain words like this? So therefore, when I turned the page, I turned with full of curiosity, what will Prabhupada talk about in this purport? And when I turned the page and I saw Prabhupada, very first line, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has diverted the entire meaning of this verse as spoken by Durvasa Muni. So then I was immediately reminded of one verse. Long, long ago I had heard during one class of by His Grace Gauranga Prabhu. So he mentioned this verse. He says, Keshavam pratitam drishtva pandava harsha nirbhara rudanti kauravastu haha keshava keshava. Now many of our devotees, especially VTA, BT, they might have heard this. But even with a cursory knowledge of Sanskrit, we can understand the bare meaning of this verse. And what does he say? Keshavam patitam drishtva. So patita means fallen, or patitam means somebody is falling. So Keshavam patitam drishtva. So seeing Keshava falling, what is happening? Pandava harsha nirbhara. So the Pandavas are like full of harsha. Harsha means happiness. So immediately everybody start thinking, how can the Pandavas be happy when they see Keshav or when they see Krishna falling? How is it possible? Not only that, on the other hand, Rudanti Kauravastu. Rudanti means crying. The Kauravas are crying. Ha ha, Keshava, Keshava. So everybody, like, when I first heard that verse, I also remember, I was similarly bewildered. But later on, Gaurampuru explained, actually in Sanskrit, like even recently, as Govind Prabhu, he is taking his series about the controversies in Mahabharata. So on the very first day, he addressed this issue. So he says that how is it possible? So therefore, Govind Prabhu was mentioning that we should not try to, I mean, if sometimes such thing happens that the direct meaning does not appear to fit in with the general flow of the context, then we have to understand that there is a deeper meaning to it. It's not that always the literal meaning works. So therefore, in this particular verse, if we see, how can the Pandavas exhibit, or how can the Pandavas be very joyful when Krishna falls, or Krishna Keshava falls? And on the other hand, how can the Kauravas be very, very grief-stricken? So then the whole context behind this shloka is that at one point of time, there was a man who had hung himself by the neck and committed suicide on a tree. So when that man was hanging on the tree, and under the tree there was a pond. So when the man was hanging, that dead body was hanging on the tree, the shav was hanging on the tree, there was a squirrel which ran up to that rope and started biting through the rope. So as the squirrel started biting through the rope completely broke, and this dead body, the shava, started falling into the water. So at that time, this Keshavam Patitam Drishtva, Keshavam Patitam Drishtva, that shava, that dead body, when it was falling into the water in the pond below, when it was seen by whom? Pandava Harsha Nirbhara. Pandava also means to be fishes. In Sanskrit, Pandavas can also explained to be as fish, this word Pandava. So the fishes in the water, in the pond below, they became very happy. Food is coming. And Rudanti Kauravastu, there were crows sitting on that tree, waiting to eat that flesh of that dead body. But they started crying. The crow started crying, saying, ha ha, Keshava, Keshava, that shava is falling, that is our food, that is falling into the water. So similarly, there are so many, the other day on Monday evening, Govind Prabhu was explaining that similarly within the body of the Vedic scripture, specifically in Mahabharata, there are many, many, many places where we find such slokas which apparently do not make any meaning, they don't make any sense. From a direct perspective, if we look at it, from a direct point of view, they don't make any sense. But then there is a reason why it was written like this. And Govind Prabhu was explaining that initially, when there was this, Vyasadeva started compiling the Vedic scriptures and all the Puranas and Upanishads, he went to Brahmaji and he said, I need a scribe. I need somebody to write down whatever I am composing. Whatever I am compiling, I need somebody to write it down. So Brahmaji told, okay, Ganeshji will be your scribe. So when Ganesh ji agreed to be the scribe, he said, I have one condition but. So what is the condition? He said, you will not write, you will not stop. The moment you stop dictating, I will just finish there and I will walk away. So Vyasadeva said, okay, I accept your condition, but then I have one condition of mine. And Vyasadeva said, I will not stop, but you have to write whatever I say only after you have completely comprehended what I have said. Only after you have completely understood the meaning of what I am saying, then only you should put it on paper. Not just, you know, blindly like a stenographer. Whatever is being said, just go on blindly putting down on paper. So then Ganesh ji also agreed. So therefore, sometimes during the narration, when Vyasadeva felt that, I mean, Ganesh ji was a very fast scribe. But when he felt that he is falling a little slow and he needs some more time, then Vyasadeva would dictate one of these shlokas which are described as Kuta shlokas. And these Kuta shlokas are something which are, you know, like, I mean, if you take the direct apparent meaning, it won't make any sense. But if you try to understand it, then it makes sense. Okay, there is some deeper meaning to it. So you have to know how to understand it, how to comprehend it. So that day, Govind Prabhu gave certain examples of such Kuta shloka from the Mahabharata. So therefore, we see that this particular verse here in the Srimad Bhagavatam also, we can understand to be one such Kuta shloka. But another aspect of this is that there are always people who try to use the Vedic scriptures without properly comprehending them, without trying to understand them properly, to blaspheme the followers of Sanatan Dharma without having proper understanding of what it means, without having understanding of what it says. Like there are certain leaders of certain faiths in the world, and they, like one time when His Holiness Indradyumna Swami Maharaj was preaching in Poland through his Festival of India tours in Poland, every year for 2 months he has a big group of devotees touring through Poland. In different cities they have what they call as the Festival of India. So at that time, I mean more than 10 years ago, there was very strong opposition in Poland from the dominant religious groups in Poland. And they used to strongly propagate that these people are a very dangerous cult. Why? Because their God Himself says that He is a demon. That was what the propagation was done. And from where did they get this idea that their God Himself says that He is a demon? From Bhagavad Gita, Vibhuti Yoga, 10th chapter, where the Lord says, Praladas chasmi daityanam. And what does it mean? Among the daitya demons, I am the devoted Prahlad. So they just took what is very conducive for their preaching or their anti-preaching, that their God Himself proclaims, himself proclaims that He is the greatest demon. So therefore, such people, they have half-baked knowledge. They don't have proper understanding. And why is this? Now I'll just briefly conclude with a story of one of our devotees on book distribution. So last year during marathon, one of our devotees, His Grace Balram Shakti Prabhu, he was doing book distribution in the local trains. And at one station, when he got on the train, he saw that there were a few people of some particular faith sitting in the train, young people. And as he was distributing his book, when the next station came, he got down from the bogie and was going to board the other bogie. At that time, these three or four young people from some from a different faith, they followed him. And they followed him onto the platform. And then there was quite a bit of rush on the train. So Balaram Sakti Prabhu decided to skip the train. So while he was waiting on the platform, these three or four people, they approached him. And then they started discussing with him. So initially they approached him with some small queries about, oh, you seem to be quite educated. So then he said, yes, yes. Then he said, you are doing this particular thing about distributing Bhagavad Gita. I mean, is this some sort of a part-time thing or have you dedicated your life? So then Balaram Sakti Prabhu said, no, I have dedicated my life and like that. So they said, oh, yes, that's a very nice thing you are doing. Quite appreciative of what he was doing. And after some time, then they revealed their true colors. So then they slowly started talking about, I think you all are believers in idol worship, right? So Balaram Sakti Prabhu said, no, we don't believe in idol worship. We believe in deity worship. So he said, what is the difference? So then Balaram Sakti Prabhu explained that what is idol and what is the deity, and he explained the whole difference. So he said, okay. So you believe in deity worship. So that means if I have to approach the Lord and I am in a place, in a far away remote place where I don't have access to a deity, and I won't be able to approach the Lord? So he said, no, that is not the case. So then how should I do it? So then he explained about the holy names of the Lord and how the holy names of the Lord are non-different from the Lord. And even in the particular faith, they chant 100 names of the Lord. So therefore, he explained like this, and then he explained the whole philosophy slowly. And after some time, they started getting more and more, challenging questions. So suddenly, one of them, he thought, now I have the trump card, let me throw my trump card. And then he says, but I have heard that those who worship Asambhuti are condemned to the darkest regions of hell. So this person, he thought, maybe now I am using certain Sanskrit words. So this person might get little bewildered, because generally, not many people are so well versed with Sanskrit, and usually people get little perplexed when some Sanskrit words are thrown at them, unless. So when he said, I heard that in your scriptures it is said that those who worship Asambhuti are condemned to the darkest regions of hell. So when Balaram Sakti Prabhu heard that, he said, actually, the verse says, Andham tama pravishyanti ye asambhuti mupasate. So he quoted the entire shloka. And then it was the turn of this person to get bewildered. Because this is the first time when he quoted just one word, somebody had quoted the entire shloka back to him. This was the first time he had to said asambhutim, and then Balaram Sakti Prabhu responded with the entire shloka. And then Balaram Sakti Prabhu said, actually the word asambhuti, which is used in this particular mantra, means not worship of the deities or worship of the supreme personality of Godhead. Asambhuti means worshipping demigods. So those who worship demigods are condemned to the darkest regions of hell. That is what is the true meaning of what this verse means. So he said, okay. By this time he was like completely, in awe. He was like little scared to quote any more words, because he didn't know now what will come back at him. So then Balaram Sakti Prabhu took the offensive. He said, where have you heard? You seem to be quite well versed in our scriptures. From where did you read all this? So he said, no, actually I have read it from a book. So you have read our scriptures? So he said, yes. So have you read from our scriptures? What is the proper method of receiving knowledge? In our scriptures, this method of receiving knowledge is also described. The proper method of receiving knowledge. So have you read that? So he said, no, I have never come across anything like this. So immediately Balaram Sakti Prabhu opened the Bhagavad Gita, 4th chapter, 34th verse, and he said, see, tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashtena sevaya upadekshayanti te jnanam jnaninas tattva darshina. So what does it say? He says, just try to learn this truth by approaching a spiritual master. After approaching the spiritual master, we should inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. So this is the method. So when we render service to him and we inquire submissively, then the self-realized soul will impart knowledge to us because they themselves have seen the truth. So then he said, from where did you read this? He said, I read this from a book which was published by Oxford University Press. One professor in Oxford, Sanskrit professor in Oxford, he has written this book. So Balaram Shakti Prabhu asked him, do you think this professor in Oxford, he has gone through this process of Tadvidhi Pranipatena, rendering menial service to a spiritual master and inquiring submissively from him? So he said, no. And have you at least followed this procedure with respect to this Oxford University professor? He said, no. So then if you have not followed the procedure which is given in the Vedic scriptures about how to gain knowledge, then how do you think that you are so knowledgeable? You do one thing. You come with me right now. I will take you to such a self-realized spiritual master. You come with me. I will take to a self-realized spiritual master. You can serve him menially, humbly, ask questions, and then he will give you the knowledge. You come right now. And when Balaram Shakti Prabhu said like that, he said, no, actually right now I have to catch this train, I'll go. You can give me your phone number, I'll try to get back to you and all that. And then he just beat a hasty retreat. See, the point of all this is, actually this particular verse in Bhagavad Gita is very nicely demonstrated by Vyasadeva himself when he meets Narad Muni. And he says, find out the deficiency in me. Please, humbly he says, find out the deficiency in me. Please tell me what is wrong in me. Please tell me how I can, what should I do so that I can get rid of this despondency within my heart. And in response, Narad Muni instructs him that he has to describe the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead more vividly. And that is what Vyasadeva has done throughout the Vedic scriptures, throughout the four Vedas, the Upanishads, the Puranas, the Vedanta Sutra, and the natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, which in his maturity of spiritual realization, after being instructed by Narad Muni, Vyasadeva compiled Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra by the author of the Vedanta Sutra himself. So therefore, how can we think that there can be something which is like, blasphemous? So those who find some things like this, like somebody is saying that the Lord which these people worship, he himself declares that he is the greatest demon. Now what this can be said only by those who have not followed the proper procedure of gaining this knowledge. So therefore, we should understand that there are many people who can make any sort of meaning out of so many verses. Apparently, even in the verses where Hiranyaksha is condemning Varahadev, in many of the verses, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains how, even though apparently this verse sounds like Hiranyaksha is blaspheming Varahadev, but how actually it is glorification of Varahadev. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, just like in this purport, Prabhupada has given how Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that this entire meaning is different. It is actually glorification of Ambarish Maharaj. Similarly, many places, when Hiranyaksha blasphemes Varahadev, when Hiranyakashipu blasphemes Narasimhadev, when Jarasandh blasphemes Lord Krishna in 10th canto. So at all these places we can see how Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he has explained, actually all these, apparently they seem to be blasphemy of the Lord, but actually these are not blasphemy of the Lord, these are glorification of the Lord. And therefore we need the guidance and the assistance of a pure devotee of the Lord, of a self-realized soul, to show us or to give us that lens which will actually show us what is the true picture, rather than just taking the word at first hand, at face value. Just taking the word at face value, the verses at face value, we might be wrongly led to think that actually even there are certain verses which are talking, which are blaspheming the Lord. But that is not the case. And that cannot be the case. Because Narad Muni had expressly instructed Vyasadeva that he has to write only the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So therefore, Vyasadeva can never write anything, or Sukadeva Goswami can never describe anything which is blasphemous towards the Lord or his devotees. It is only us, our lack of understanding, our lack of comprehension that leads us to think that, oh, these verses are talking about certain blasphemy of the Lord, or somebody is committing blasphemy of the Lord. So only when great acharyas, devotees, pure devotees of the Lord, when they, out of their causeless mercy, show us the correct method in which we have to understand these verses, then we will be able to truly understand the proper meaning of these words. Otherwise, if we do not follow this particular procedure of surrendering to the acharyas, the supreme person, the pure devotees of the Lord, then just as an academic exercise, if we try to read the Srimad Bhagavatam, then we will be completely led astray and we will commit so many offenses at the lotus feet of the Lord and his devotees. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. If there are any comments, actually we have gone way beyond time, and I beg apology that I took so much more time. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavat Mahapuran ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.